Good morning, thank you. And out of all the presentations that I've seen in the ASA catalog, this could be the one that is probably the most unique. And I will be the first to admit that part of my goal for the day is to at least start a dialogue and to be able to maybe open up a little bit of the black box when we start talking about faith-based partnerships, both in global agronomy and both in local extension. As you can see, our partners that have done some of the work with me. I'm adjunct faculty at Washington State University, Missouri State University, but I do work for a faith-based NGO, and then I teach at a small liberal arts college in Springfield, Missouri that's had a science department since 1950, but they claim to be boldly superior academics and boldly Christian. I do hold credentials with an evangelical denomination, so I am a minister. However, I also attend a Presbyterian church. So if we look at both scales, I grew up in a Catholic church, had Baptist roots, also other roots, and I'm a little bit of a Presbyterian. So my overall goals this morning really kind of demystify some of that evangelical faith-based organization piece, give us as researchers and extension agents insight into perhaps the evangelical mindset, help potential researchers know some of the boundaries, some of the yes or no, you may or may not want to partner with a faith-based organization, and if we fall, you fall on either one of the spectrum, at least be able to open up that dialogue. There is a great working paper that was put out in 2012 on academic NGO collaboration, and you can see the authors that are there. World Vision and FAO, I think, were some of the co-writers on that and some of the sponsors. And it goes through a lot of the particulars of NGO collaboration, not from the faith-based perspective, but just that collaboration piece. And it's a great resource, and you can go to it. It's still a working paper. They haven't finalized it yet, but it just addresses some of those overall questions. When we start to ask the question about what is faith-based, these are very general. These are, in some of the things that I'll say, I don't hide anything about who I am or what I believe, and so I generally take the extremes on either case to make a point. But when we start talking about faith-based, it's generally groups that have God, Jesus, Christ, evangelism, transformational change or transformational development, denominational connections in either their statement of faith, their name, or they have a statement of faith, in their mission statements. And as a whole, they have Bible, God, faith as a part of their core. That is who they are, and that is part of who they are as an organization. There's differences inside the faith-based community. When we look here in the global perspective of faith-based, we generally start to divide groups into the liturgical and the non-liturgical. Liturgical churches generally considered to be Catholic, Methodist, Anglican, Presbyterian, Disciples of Christ, if you start just kind of that denominational piece. The non-liturgical are going to be those that we would probably classify in the evangelical category. Those Baptist, Pentecostal, non-denominational, those tend to be that evangelical wing. Some... Depending on where you are politically, Democrat versus Republican, those are some of those pieces of differences. And you also can take the liturgical and the non-liturgical, and you'll divide churches into groups sometimes that are really about a social message and a social gospel, and then those that are really into spreading that message of the gospel, and that is their drivers. And the liturgical and the evangelical sometimes split that way as well. So if you look at... the last general session of the PCUSA and their General Assembly that took place just a few months ago, and you look at the things that they were able to pass within that General Assembly, it was all everything that is socially in the media, in Congress, in the government that we are debating socially, that was their platforms. You would not necessarily see that at the Baptist Convention. And if we're being honest and we start talking about this dialogue, it's the evangelical piece that generally scares academics and researchers and collaborators away. We know that there's proven, even with the PCUSA, Catholic Relief Services, World Vision, there are some great faith-based partnerships that we've seen, and they work, and some of us have participated in those. But if we take it to that next level about an evangelical partnership with, say, the Assemblies of God or the Baptist Church. There's so many unknowns at times that it starts to fear us because we have this separation between both faith and academics as a whole. And at times we do believe that we're working against each other, especially when we start talking about evolution. Automatically everybody's cackles go up and we can start and divide the room. Evolution is just the main driver lately, or now if you looked at global warming and threw that out there, if we had these different denominational lines, there would be totally different answers on either side. I would like to contend that we can and that we should work together. There are pros, there are cons, and there are perimeters. In every partnership, partnerships are hard work. Anytime we're collaborating with the Oregon School District, I know those schools, I know Portland, and the when you're talking about integrated pest management and the rules that they come up with, partnerships are interesting. They take time, they take trust, and they always carry a little bit of risk. Sometimes your risk is heavier than others, but those are things that we know about good partnerships. But when we're talking about that evangelical piece, I really believe that if our common goal is serving our stakeholders and alleviating chronic hunger, especially on the sides of a global agronomy and helping our communities, then we have to at least try and have to at least open up the dialogue. When we talk about what are some of the pros of partnering with an evangelical community and that evangelical faith-based group, they at their core truly do want to help the people they serve. And it goes beyond just thumping them with the Bible. It really is, they do want to help the people they serve. They can and they do have common goals as we would as educators and academics. They phrase them a little differently, but when you look at who they are, they do have some of the common goals. And when we as extension educators are able to clarify those goals, they're generally never in conflict. One of the greatest things that I see as an advantage is they have access to trusted stakeholders. The faith-based community, through the church network and through the community network, have people that they have trusted. They have people that they have access to, and they've really already vetted. And in that vetting process, it gives us greater success for good results. Because if they go into a community, say in the global community side, generally the church community knows whether or not that guy's a bonehead or not. And they can help make our decision process a little bit easier on our partnership. He or she, I don't need to be, I'll be general neutral on the bonehead comment. They are generally community-focused versus profit-focused, and I think that is a great advantage. Because I think as individuals, as a whole, when we're talking about profit and individual gain, we always are going to end up having power struggles. But as a whole, as a core, they are outward-focused. They are concerned, or at least they should be concerned, about their neighbor. And that gives some advantages. They are always looking for partner experts. Most faith-based organizations do not have a PhD in soil science on their staff. They don't have extension agents that have expertise in these different fields. They want to help. They need experts. They're looking for partnerships. They can bring funding to the table. For example, I've had scientists from ARS. I've had scientists from Washington State. In 2 weeks, I'll have collaborators from Missouri State in Haiti with me, talking with farmers, interacting with the university. All of those six scientists came off of my budget dime. So I was able to interact with them. I was able to partner with them and say, this doesn't have to come out of your budget. I will pay for it. There is funding that they can bring to the table. And believe it or not, they tend to be pretty gracious. You can believe what you want to believe, and we tend to be okay with that. We will allow differences. I think we're gracious, but we all have our days. When I work at Convoy of Hope, I direct the Department of Agriculture, and I went through part of these yesterday in my seminar on during global agronomy. But if you look at it from an agricultural standpoint, and some of our goals within our department, developing local assessment, creating formal education pathways and in training, creating a professional staff in country, and then implementing strategies for soil quality, nutrition. I've heard that in this session today. These are our common goals. The things that we discuss and the things we talk about agriculture, we have the very same perspective. And there's not one piece of faith-based component in here. Our goals can be very similar. And when we do start to work together and we start to be able to collaborate, and this was out of collaborations that came from myself and the university and ARS, in a small community where we centered around the local church, we were able to have cropping increases from 326 kilogram to hectare to 1,280 over four growing seasons. And there's different components that are there, but ARS was willing to partner. Washington State was willing to partner because we were able to, I had access to farmers, they had access to bean varieties. They had expertise that I needed, and we were able to partner. I was able to take the science to the people and the people to the science. What are some of the cons? The faith-based community is not used to the requirements of peer-reviewed publications. They don't understand it, and it is not generally their priority. Once they kind of know that's there, like for example, I get to be here on my NGO's dime because they see the validity now that I need to be at a hip present, I need to be here. They see that. They just needed to be instructed. The data is not always their main focus. If you are with that evangelical community, the people are the focus. It isn't necessarily the data. And that can cause some hiccups. They don't always have the expertise. You might have to help train them as they go along. In that partnership and in building that trust, building that training on, if we're taking soil samples and we're looking at a soil methodology, soil amendment, or soil conservation study in some farmers in Haiti or in Tanzania and El Salvador, you might have to train them along. You might have to say, you know what, I'm going to take and I'm going to come visit you and we're going to spend 16 hours before you go to the field and I'm going to train you on what I need. And so they need that piece. It doesn't come instinctual to them. Or we're here, we sit in a room for the last hour and we've got soil, we've got NRCS, we've got soil science, and some of us sit in the back going, oh yeah, I can do that. That's not their first nature. They may not be able to use governmental funds. Depending on the organization, depending on their bent, they may not want to compromise their faith-based stance and some of the rigors that come along with the USAID funding. Others do. And some of them might make the choice that they will not take the government funds. So that becomes a con if you have that government fund and you want to partner with them. They as an organization may choose not to do it because they can't proclaim faith or they can't not meet in a local church, whatever it might be. And the elephant in the room is they might not trust scientists. They might not trust science because of things like divides on creation versus evolution or global climate change issues. There are other lists that you guys can probably add to these cons, but I think these are the ones that blare out at us. So in the end, we start talking about what are the perimeters? What should we know? We have to give clear expectations to those faith-based organizations to say, this is what I need, and this is how I'm going to come about it, and this is how I'm going to approach it. We have to be able to understand their goals and not devalue them. So one of my partners from ARS, he will tell you that he is tolerant of me, but he doesn't devalue who I am. And at the same time, I don't devalue his worldview either. So for example, he will go in, and when we go into Haiti, he knows full well that I'm not going to buy him beer. He shouldn't be drinking on site, because in our case, drinking is an issue for where we are on site. And if he smokes, he's going to go off site and he just goes around a corner. He doesn't flaunt that he has to smoke. And there's been times where we've been on site for over a week and I know that he needs a drink. And I'll say, hey, now is a good clear time for you to, you know, if you want to have a beer, have a beer. But he knows that we can't do it. So he doesn't value who I am or what that faith base stands for. Even when we come to pray for a meal, He doesn't participate, but he doesn't storm out of the room with his hands up going, I can't believe that you prayed. You're partnering with a faith-based organization, you know somewhat what you're getting yourself into. Don't argue over the differences. If we're good people with a common goal, we can agree to a disagree on a few of these issues. If we all agree that we're out to help the people, then let's not get in a argument on whether or not you think that the earth is 6,000 years old, or if you're a creation evolutionist, or a theistic evolutionist, or you're a Darwinian evolutionist. Some of the evangelicals that I hang out with, I've got scientist friends that are on the entire scale on that creation piece, and my argument is, from a faith-based standpoint, it's not on your entrance exam to heaven, so really don't need to worry about it right now. Let's worry about what we need to do out in the field. And we have to be able to equip our partners with the appropriate equipment and training. One of my collaborators in the past came up to me today. He's like, do you have an AA analyzer in Haiti that you have access to? I'm like, well, I might be able to, but I don't have access to it right now. He's like, oh, okay. He's like, I'm working on a fertilizer study. And I'm trying to see whether or not you could help me. And he could see he just wandered off. And he's coming back with me on maybe or not he can get me an AA in country. Because I can't provide one. I don't have a full-size lab in country. So you might have to be able to give them the appropriate equipment and then training to work on it. And you have to be honest. You have to be able to start asking those questions. Where is my line as a personal individual and as a group? And can I or can I not focus with that faith-based community partner? Ask about whether or not they've taken USDA funding. Look at their background. Look at their mission statement. Look at their core missions. And if you can, do a site visit. And again, it all comes out to face-to-face. And one of the examples, and this is just one denomination, one evangelical denomination, there are 366,000 community points. Some would call them churches, some would call them community points of interest, but these are gathering points within the global community in 280 countries, where there have 67 million adherents. That is people who need education and that we can partner with. And existing spots that people already gather. And when you've already got an existing gathering point, why not tap into that for extension education? And questions? And there is nothing off the table with me. I'll say it all.
Question for Jason? Can you give us an example of success story where you have partnership between the denominational NGO and an academic institution?
Our results from Haiti have been very positive, and then last week, we signed a memorandum of understanding with Missouri State University, and it was signed by both the president of the university and the College of Agriculture, and a full, very legal document, MOU, very university friendly, where it says on it exactly, item number 6 in the very first objective is this not a religious partnership. There is no religious affiliation. We will not be condoning blah, 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 blah. However, it's opening up the College of Agriculture to do student exchanges, high-end training at the university system, student exchanges from the Haitian University back into Missouri State, and extension practices throughout the country. And so we just signed that this last week, and myself as a faith-based organization with Missouri State, and it was very publicized and it has already been successful. We were able to finally just formalize it with an MOU between the president of the university.
You talked about the pro and con from the perspective of academic institutions,
yes,
and NGOs. What about the stakeholders themselves, the countries or the places you go to? What are their input with respect to that kind of relationship? And how do they view where maybe evangelism is going into research or vice versa?
In our case, if we're partnering with that faith-based community, they are not, it's never been an issue. And because either we're going in, and I would also, and I just didn't say this, but If your faith-based organization that you are partnering with is exclusive to only their faith-based community on who receives the education, then that is a red flag and you need to stay away. So for us, our community partners don't see an issue with it. We just gather at the local church, and that it doesn't matter whether or not they are part of church membership or not. And then for me, I'm not blatant in how we present our message. It is core to who we are, but it's not core to the educational piece. Like in our case, and in Haiti, this is part of what they do, regardless if it was around church, but the farmers will randomly start singing "How Great Thou Art," "How Great Thou Art," at the beginning of their extension workshops. And that's just part of their culture. We didn't even know that, and we went in on the business side on that piece. So we haven't seen any type of conflict. In El Salvador, we currently work with 6 different schools with extension programs, and we've got 800 students. And we're a faith-based partnerships that works right into the school. The school district does it in open arms. Our group in Tanzania, we work with Maasai widows, and we work in with the Lutheran church because they have access to the people. But when we come in on the university side, on my experience in El Salvador, Nicaragua, Haiti, and Tanzania, there hasn't been any conflict from the stakeholders. They just appreciate getting the information to them any way possible. Thanks.